What's your background, my friend?
My background is multifamily. So, you know, I've been in the multifamily space for really the entirety of my career. Got in when I was 23 and worked on the corporate side for a long time, which, you know, was great. But it was also one of these situations where I got into real estate to own my own real estate. And I've been in the industry for 20 years. And guess what? I didn't own any of my own real estate.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, it was one of these things where I was just like, you know, I'm working the industry and I like knowing my own stuff. So I knew it was gonna be hard. Said, hey, you know, we got to figure it out. And that's the reality of it. You know, and I found this to be the case for most of the corporate guys that I used to work with and still know, is that they don't have a personal portfolio. They're still kind of placing money for, you know, other guys and paid well. You know, and sometimes I really miss that stable paycheck. I do. You know, and my biggest regret on the corporate side was that I wasn't buying my own small deals in other locations while I was there. And because, you know, when you're kind of taking a big salary, you kind of just live on that salary. Just kind of go, this is cool and easy. I got a 401k, it's building, and you know, you're not building that secondary wealth. And I say that, but I also know for a fact that at my last shop, had I been buying deals on the side, even if it was in some other market, even if it was in some location where they were not, you know, upgrading, it still would have been kind of a, well, wait a minute, you have time to do deals in other markets? Like, why aren't you doing more deals in our markets? Because there was never enough. You know, it didn't matter if you totally knocked the ball out of the park on what you're supposed to be doing for the organization. They always wanted more. And that was one thing. I just kind of said, hey, you know, gotta figure out how to get out and get past that. So and that's the goal. But this guy Storm, you know, what he really brought up on the podcast yesterday, which was a whole conversation topic, was the difference between the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers, and how the Vanderbilts, and I did not know the story prior to this this presentation, but apparently they, when they handed on their wealth to their heirs, the heirs lost all the money. They were not able to maintain it. Whereas the Rockefellers, they left their money to their heirs, but had really strict stipulations with how the heirs were allowed to use that money. They had to invest, they could only spend the principal on principal assets. They could never take from the principal, and they could only take distributions from the income generated off of those cash producing assets, which forced them to actually be very, very diligent with what they could even put the money into that would generate cash flow for them. And as a result, the Rockefellers are still a very wealthy family that has continued to do this, and the Vanderbilts did not. So that was a kind of interesting mindset thing that I had not previously thought of, that I'm like, now I really want to get from that personally. Not that we haven't thought of it, but it's like, okay, this is something I'd really like to, you know, really do more of.
Definitely didn't hear that story, but you know, as of last year, especially as both my wife and I's income has gone up, we've started to, and the help of, you know, being strategic partners with Emmett and those guys, get into trust. So I got bridge trust set up and all that kind of stuff, and estate planning. And yeah, they definitely talked a lot about that. Hopefully we're all raising kids. This is a you know, real estate, I think, in dad's podcast, that like they're all, you know, financially competent and they're not making shitty choices. But, you know, ultimately you do want to put those kind of those guardrails in to make sure. Cause my whole thing is like, I do this cause I care about cash flow. So rather than just giving them all the assets or liquidating if something was happening with my wife and I, is to continue for them to just like be able to participate in that cash flow over time. But that's taken to a next level, like the structuring. So that's interesting. I need to go back and listen to that.
You know, what I see about that also is it kind of forces blinders on the use of the capital. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of heirs, when, you know, there's a need, all of a sudden, hey, this thing has happened and I need money. And, you know, it's not necessarily like, oh, well, I'm going to use this cash for a frivolous purpose. It's just something major occurred and they're like, hey, I need this cash. But if that money is locked up in such a way that they can't access it at all, it further forces ability to actually figure those things out. And that's actually what I kind of like, because then it doesn't even, it's not even like there's a, the safety net is not viewed as a safety net. It's kind of always this just a little bit of a pedal assist, I'll call it. So Justin, we had a conversation previously. You were, you know, raising a fund, and I think you had done more than one when we originally connected regarding your short-term rental portfolio. And, you know, and you're here on our Real Estate Dads podcast, and we've now already learned that you have, you know, intense care about wanting to, you know, leave legacy wealth for your kids. So, you know, we want to hear more about that. And let's get over to you. So let's hear the first thing. What's your dad situation?
Oh, what's my dad's situation? Okay, so I have four kids.
You have four?
I have four. Yes, sir. Yeah. So that's why it became, I guess that's evolved, but extremely important to not only make sure that my wife and I, do well, not only for the legacy aspect and, all those, buzzwords that we hear now, but are incredibly important, but, more than anything else and how I look at it is that, like, I never want to be a burden on them, right? Like I see a lot of people, and it might just come down to, theoretical or I guess, philosophical beliefs of myself, like, I have my kids. I love them. I do. They're my driving force for almost everything I do. But one of the biggest things that I don't want to be is a burden on them as I get older. And I think it's incredibly important that, like, my wife and I make sure that we are setting ourselves up in old age to, take care of ourselves and our kids are able to do whatever they want to do. Right. Like, my wife and I have traveled the world. We still continue to travel. And we want them to do the same. And I just don't believe in, forcing any one of my kids to have restrictions on their ability to live life to the fullest because they love mom and dad. They want to stay with us and take care of us. You know what I mean?
How old are your kids?
So I got a spread, bro. So my oldest daughter is 15, just got a learner's permit. So happy days. Then I have three boys, all savages, 11, 6, and Lennox will be 2 this month. So got to try.
That's crazy, man. You look like you're 30.
I mean, yeah, no, bro. Just to take care of myself. I'm a lot older than that, so for sure.
You do look 30. I agree. You got like...
Well, I'm 38, so. But I was a Navy guy, man, so I started young and I didn't miss, so it's all good.
It's good. Love it.
There it is.
So, and you've got this view now on bring. Okay, so legacy wealth, you've got the four kids, and let's go into what you do professionally.
Yeah, so I'm a real estate guy. It's funny, we were talking about multifamily. So I started off in real estate. I kind of cut my teeth in multifamily syndication. And, what ultimately happened for that was, and we can get into kind of the origin backstory before that, but, getting into deals with other syndicators, being a really small portion of a GP, I would just come across guys who are like, yeah, man, I'm in like 3,000 doors, 4,000 doors. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, that's amazing. But like, how much cash flow are you actually getting? And it wasn't a whole lot. Those numbers were really small. And then as you started pulling back the layers, I almost started viewing multifamily as a great wealth generation tool, but really as a flip, right? It's like, you make sure you operate these things, for 5-7 years and marketing conditions are right. You sell it, like you get this windfall. And for me, I just looked at real estate through the prism of like, I wanted to focus more on cash flow and didn't want to be as subjected to kind of like marketing conditions and things like that. So I just saw an opportunity in the short term rental space and, start off with my first triplex in West Palm Beach. And, it's been off to the running from there.
When was that, Justin, when you picked up that triplex?
2018, back early 2019 was the first one. So tried to use the quasi multifamily model. I had two tenants in that covered the mortgage. I said, hey, let me go ahead and try it out on the other one. And it worked. And I spent the next 2 months getting those other two tenants up out of there. And the rest was history. I started buying like condos in Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach Island, West Palm, and then it kind of grew into syndicating STRs. And that's kind of how Lestermore Capital was born.
Great. Great. And you find that the cash flow and the short-term rental side is better?
Oh, exponentially better. I mean, now, great. Like anything else, man, there's market cycles. So you guys know, early days in this game, and probably even well before I got into it, I mean, you could pretty much throw anything on the market. It was going to do well. Debt has changed and, time has changed. But what I did realize and where I saw the opportunity was, is that if you actually can provide a great experience for your guests, your occupancy is going to stay pretty high and, people are going to pay or be okay paying a premium. So now that's kind of led me into like, now we buy much larger homes. And my thesis is, I go to areas where like, I love Florida. I started off in South Florida. I don't really buy that much there anymore. I'm in more, you want to call them tertiary markets like Cocoa Beach and Brevard County. I go into like coastal Mississippi, coastal Alabama, Gulf Shores is a great one. And I buy larger homes. And how I look at it is even in a recessionary times, people still travel. They definitely still come to Florida. And when you're buying a larger house, you can go with a whole family, two families, and your options are go get a large STR property or get 5 hotel rooms, right? And so it's like, I'm trying to create this space where, you know, it's always going to have viability in these markets, and it's not, and we're providing a great experience, and it's not terribly oversaturated. And we've been able to win, especially throughout, like coming out of COVID and even now, where we're able to still buy properties and kind of use this strategy.
So always the most economical option for guests and usually the best experience.
Like, oh, 100%.
It's way better staying in a big ass house than five hotel rooms. So much more comfortable, casual. No one at the front desk is looking at you when you walk in, like that you got to like sneak your dog in by or whatever, right? Like all those little things that come with a hotel. It's like, it's just yours. It's your space. It's your private space.
Oh, 100%, man. And like how we do it, it's like, well, we put two kitchens in there. We do like the whole experience thing in the garage where the kids can play. Like the last property we bought, it's like on the water. We provide like concierge service. So you go in, like you said, you have your own space. You can cook your own food. We help you out with concierge if you want a private chef to come in. And what a lot of people don't know is like you can, that's an income generating thing. You can participate in that income, all those additional things they do in the properties. And we've been able to really make that a successful model. So, man, I love this business. The cash flow is great, to answer your question.
That's great to hear. So, and I mean, I love hearing the story. And, you know, and I love hearing that there's new venture ways for people to make money in real estate, because that's something I think everyone is always looking for. You know, I'm not meaning to say that it's like a clickbait kind of thing, but I mean, like, you know, multifamily 20 years ago, the industry is totally different than what's today. And you're right. The cash flow has kind of been sucked out. Like they've made it such a thin game that you really end up kind of owning these assets for a really long period of time. And the sponsors are the ones that actually get squeezed the most generally, you know, the operators as opposed to the A-class investors. And, you know, and I love hearing that there's you know, the entrepreneurial way of figuring out that within real estate, there's this other venue, which is what you're now tackling. And Justin, you know, so big question, you, four kids, Navy guy, how was it for you growing up? Was there a change from what your dad did with you? Or is this just like, hey, like how was that process? Was your dad there? Was he not around? And how did those influences affect how you are today with having this, hey, I don't want to be a burden on my kids. I want to make sure that I'm giving them all their opportunities.
Oh man, you're going deep already. Jeez, man. So I guess I did that myself for talking about that on the front end. But yeah, man, I think like all of us, we're shaped and informed based off of our experiences in our childhood. So, yeah, man, like, so I grew up in Baltimore, which is a really crappy city. Glad I grew up there, but like, isn't the greatest. So I was happy to get out of there when I went to the Navy, but you know, like most people where I come from, no dad, mom ended up going to jail when I was a teenager. So I had pretty much like free reign to do what I wanted to do. So, but I think I just had that in me that, you know, I always wanted more for myself, and not having a dad around was a great motivator for me, because it just informed me on like how I wanted to be a parent and, you know, the importance of being in my kid's life. So it was the best possible way of growing up in my opinion for me. Right. So now I have really deep relationships with my kids, really loving, and they're my true driving force for why I strive to be great and be a great example for them. Right. You know, coming from that to, you know, it's funny, we just broke ground on our house here in Jupiter, you know, to be 38 and, you know, building a $4 million house in a place that I absolutely love. It's pretty credible. And it's all because of real estate and, you know, the drive I have for giving a great life to my kids.
So did you have any strong male role models when you were growing up, or that it was, you were just running around looking? I mean, I love the, like the anti-victim mentality that you took on, and you were like, I can empathize with that because I'd never met my biological father either. And I was always just like, tell that guy, I don't want to know that dude. Like, I ain't going to be that way. I'm going to be the opposite of that shit. Right. It's like, I was surrounded by really strong male role models. So I was fortunate in that regard. So like, what was that like for you? Did you have anything to learn from like guys like that? Or?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I can't really think of anyone, like, man, I lived with my grandparents. But at that point, when we were sent to live there, you know, I was kind of just running around, man. And like just having a childhood in the city and, you know, enjoying, you know, the freedom of not having a whole lot of responsibilities and stuff. So, but no, man, like I think how I look at life, one is just perspective. Like I don't look at anything really as good or bad. It's just kind of like, what do you learn from it? And like, how can you help shape you into, you know, being the best person that you can be, right? And I think I take from a lot of people, whether it's reading, you know, just watching people. I'm just a huge advocate of like mentorship, but it doesn't need to be in direct, like where somebody's like, hey, you're my mentee and they're the mentor. Like I watch people and that I respect and I like what they're doing. And really, I just try to pattern my life based off of like what I want that to look like and how I want to be perceived by my kids. So wasn't a great answer for you, but that's kind of what it was.
That's good, man. I get it. So did you go, when did you go into the Navy? How old were you?
18. So right out of high school, I went in. And it was funny. I was actually just talking to a guy about this. And he was like, you need to tell the story. I just told it to my wife because I guess she didn't realize it. So I was getting in trouble a little bit. You know, nothing major. They do this thing called like weekend jail where I'm from. And pretty much like the judge is going to put me on like probation for like 10 years, which is like the ultimate trap. And I actually went into court and this was probably 2 months after I got out of high school. And I said, hey, if I go to the military, can you kind of like drop this case? And it was something like minor. I think it was like driving a suspended license. And like, you know, I think I like, you know, DUI or something like that, you know, just being a dumb kid for where I'm from. And she was like, yeah. And honestly, that was the best decision I ever made. And who knows if I even would have ended up in the military if it wasn't for those kind of things that took place. And, you know, the Navy really was where I got the foundation for like discipline and being focused. Because then once I was in there in that environment, like I do really well in like structure. And that kind of just helped me kind of, you know, put my life on this trajectory.
I'm a big advocate of structure. I think men need structure. And I think that, you know, and I do not have any armed forces experience compared to the two of you, but the, you know, but I am definitely an advocate. In a rearview mirror, I think it would have been a benefit, you know, because it would have been something that would have had so much structure that I think it would have really assisted.
It's good to be exposed to it for just, even just a little bit. 4-year yeah. contract is like so much. Yeah. And you carry them bennies with you for life, you know, as it turns out.
For sure, man. And people, I think, don't you hear it on social media and all that, like the little sound bites, but I truly believe, man, like if you're disciplined, that is like has the maximum benefit of just like I think success in life. Like I don't believe I have any true special talents, but what I can do is I'm not scared to work and I'm super disciplined in like how I go about my day and the things that I'm focused on, like I will do it and I won't go to sleep until it's done if it was meant for me to do that day. So even up to like, I get up 4:30 every single day. I don't care if I go to sleep at 9, which is best case scenario, or 1 o'clock in the morning to work out. And I do that to force myself that like, you know, if you stay up late for whatever reason, it's going to suck tomorrow, but you still got to do it. Right. And it's kind of a mindset thing that helps you kind of overcome, you know, all of life's perceived challenges, because when you really boil it back down, like there isn't a whole lot of hard stuff out there. We just like to say that in our heads.
not here, right? Not in this first world.
So 4:30 wake up. What time do your kids wake up?
They wake up, you know, they saunter out of bed 6:37-ish to go to school. So the big kids a little bit earlier. Now.
So you're at 4:30 and what do you do?
So I go to the gym, man. I work out every day. So I have a gym in my garage and then I go to Lifetime, which is good, which is also good networking. I used to be kind of a dusty, grimy CrossFit gym guy, but I realized as I've kind of grown my business, like going to a little bit nicer places, you can make some good relationships in there, raise the capital.
What are them Lifetime memberships running out there in Miami?
Oh, man. So I'm up in Palm Beach County, so in Jupiter, but for the family, oof, you're pushing like $700 a month. It's not cheap, my friend.
My membership at Lifetime is $199 for me for 8
yeah yeah for one person. I think
not even for the kids. If I want kids care, now I'm paying like an extra $100, you know.
Yeah, you got the wife, kids care. Yeah, for sure.
I'm 24-hour fitness.
What's that, Max?
24-hour fitness. I pay $19 a month.
24-hour fitness. Oh no, that's not Planet. I'm thinking about Planet Fitness. Where's the one with the commercials where it's like the lug alert and all that?
24 fitness still around?
24. I mean, it's fine. I mean, 24 is great as far as here in Southern California. It's fine. It's not a Lifetime. It's not Equinox. I've had memberships at Equinox in the past, but 24, it's got all the stuff I need. But no, the one you're describing is Planet Fitness. Planet Fitness is they're the no judgment zone.
That's where you don't work out. That's where you work out.
Well, you know, it's actually funny. Planet Fitness on their they've gotten in trouble recently, which, you know, is a little bit comical, but they recently got caught with a female who took a photo of a male in the female's locker room, and it caused a big issue. And there was an interview with the former CEO of that organization. And because Planet Fitness said, we are a no judgment zone and we don't judge anyone at all, no matter if it's a male in the female locker room. And the CEO who founded the organization, who hasn't been a member of that company for, you know, over 20 years now, goes, yeah, you know, we founded this gym and we wanted it to be a place for people who had no experience working out to get experience working out and not be judged. We wanted it to be an entry level position. They kind of wanted it to be this place, exactly what you described. Like, they were not going to judge anyone at all. But then it turned into this kind of situation where they had no concern whatsoever. And guys, my wife is going into labor right now.
Hell yeah.
Nice, man. Congrats.
Get out of here, man.
I'm getting a notice right now. I'm going to go make a phone call. I'm going to come back. Maybe say goodbye and maybe not, but I'm gonna let you guys continue this.
That's awesome, awesome, brother. Man.
That's cool, man. That's fitting for sure.
Oh man, I guess I should have warned you up front that that could happen. She was supposed to, I think today is her actual due date.
Oh really? Oh yeah, should postpone this thing, man. But it's all good.
And
it's her second kid.
Okay, so this is number two for him. Okay.
Yeah, she called it too. She was like, "I'm gonna go into labor next week." She said that last week.
Nice, man. They know, man. It's their bodies for sure. How many kids do you have?
Two.
Okay. All right. Oh, I got both you guys covered then, man. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. No, I got a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. So I'm like, you know, still dealing with the different kind of chaos than you are, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure, man. But I mean, I told you, my youngest is still one. He'll be two here soon and stuff. So, but it's fun, man. I love it, bro. Like, the more the merrier. I would have 100, man, for sure.
For real?
Yeah, man, bro.
Bro, I got snipped already.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Man. No, man.
So guys, Justin, yeah. I'm so glad to have you on this podcast. I really want to have more information. I can't wait to hear the rest of the podcast. Trevor, we'll take it from here. and, you know, and the legacy wealth, you know, I mean, this podcast really hits it on the head. I'm so glad. And Justin, because I'm saying this, because I'm going to be jumping off here. But, you know, I love the story. You know, I love the story of just saying, hey, look, I'm going to fix my shit. My dad wasn't around and that doesn't matter. I'm going to go out and have 4 kids. I'm going to kick ass and take names. And I'm going to have a short-term rental portfolio that kicks ass and does everything. And then I'm not concerned or scared of anything for the future. I love it.
Hey, man, so, appreciate that, brother.
And I'll look forward to connecting with you offline, you know, at some point. And Trevor, should I leave the call or should I leave it open? Just leave it, right?
Yeah, you can leave.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. All right, guys. We'll see you soon. I'll give you guys updates once I meet the baby.
Yeah, man. Awesome, brother. Congrats, bro. Beautiful.
Right. Easy, guys.
Later, dude.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it makes for. I think that makes for good content.
Yeah, why not, bro? Yeah, that's a baby. It's life, man. It's a beautiful part of life, bro. It's the best.
Yeah, man. I got snipped up, dude, because. I saw like this, you know what, dude, I told my wife, I said, I'm down to have a third kid now.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to wait until the second one is out of diapers and speaking English just to go through
all that again.
Through it again. I would rather deal with two babies and two under two in diapers and everything. I'd rather deal with that. Right. Cause like it's already, you know, the first 2 years is just, you know, the first year is pure chaos. And then the second year, like the chaos kind of like slowly trends down to not chaotic. I feel like, you know,
no, 100%. And, when they hit 3, no more diapers, bag, bottles, you just get in the car and roll. So 100%.
Exactly. They can dress themselves. They can wash themselves. They're starting to help like do stuff, you know, and I love that part. And I kind of just didn't want to, I guess it's like silly, but I didn't really want to go through it. I didn't want to spend the next 4 or 5 years going through it. I wanted to just knock it all out now.
Yeah, no, respect, man. I mean, everybody, you know, has what they like and has a vision for what they want their life to look like. And that's cool, man. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, for sure. Yeah. It's just that was me. But I got mad respect for the people that I can just keep bringing in kids and they just take it in stride. And you got this, like, you got this tribe at home. Like that's respectable, man. Like that is not easy.
Yeah, sure. Man. I mean, I think the vision for me, and it's come to be my wife as well. It's like, and this is part of the reason why we're building this house. It's like, we really are trying to be thoughtful about like what we want our lives to look like. And not only now in the short term, but also in the future. And I really love the idea. And again, it probably goes back to childhood and stuff of like having a big family, having kind of a home base. Like we're not parents that are like, hey, we want you to stay, even though we love Florida, right? Stay here, go to school here. Like I want them to go out into the world and travel and stuff. Like I've lived in Japan. I lived in England. I've been to every continent except for Antarctica. We still travel. We're going to South Africa here in a couple months with the kiddos. But I want this kind of home base of when the holidays come around and stuff, like, come on, man, bring your partner, eventually grandkids and stuff. And like, that's what we kind of see for the future. And, you know, I'm enjoying now, but I'm looking forward to that too.
Oh yeah, man. Right on. You guys think you're going to stay around in Florida?
Oh man. Heck yeah, bro. We love it here, man. So yeah. My wife is English. She, grew up in, Leicestershire. And, yeah, like we both just fell in love with Florida. And so, yeah, we're here for the long haul, brother. You're over in Arizona, right?
I'm in Las Vegas. I grew up in Arizona.
Oh, okay. That's what it was. Yeah. I was just in Vegas last week. So,
yeah.
So my business partner opened up a restaurant on the strip. So they got like a VIP event. So, I mean, I flew in, flew out. So, it was cool though, man. Like, Vegas is always an interesting place for sure.
It really is, dude. Yeah, it's certainly what I've come to find. There's a lot of pretty interesting opportunity here. I think this is our last. I've been here since 2009. I think this is our last year here. But
oh, really? Where you been thinking about heading to?
We've got a few places in mind, man. We've been really got our eye on Tennessee.
Okay.
I just think it's gorgeous there. I really love the country. I grew up in the country in Arizona on a ranch, so I couldn't wait to leave it when I was younger. And go, you know, to the city, if you will, or just go out in the world. But now I just can't wait to get back. So
we're kind of just
starting to look for places that can accommodate that. You know, when my dad was a cattle rancher and horse trainer and raised cattle. And I really like the idea of having a beef ranch. And one thing I learned growing up is that Arizona is actually not the best place to do that. It's like you need, you know, so many acre per head, where in Tennessee you can fit so many head per acre type of thing. Wow. You know, there's other stuff. So, you know, it's good lessons learned. Like, you know, if you really want to raise beef, you got to just go to the place where the ground and the sky just feed them for free. Right.
Right. For sure.
And then I've been in the desert my whole life. So I kind of just want to, you know, we're thinking we're going to go out there for a year just to check it out and see what it's like. See if we want to put roots down there. Florida has definitely come up in conversation a time or two. My wife's not a big fan of humidity or hurricanes.
Yeah, I would have to say, bro, that's the price of living in paradise. But yeah, man, I mean, look, it's not for everyone. I'm just a huge advocate of like, go to what you love, man. I mean, I got buddies that love the mountains, and it's like, you know, up in Washington and stuff. And we're ocean, beach, sunshine people, man. Like, you know, I don't mind the heat, and I just love the sunshine. It's funny because like after traveling so much, when I moved back to England with my wife, you know, she was like, you know, it's the weather is much different here. And I'm like, oh, it's all right. I grew up in the mid-Atlantic, you know, I live in Japan, traveled around. And like after, I didn't realize I was kind of acclimatized to Florida, like just constant sunny days. And I was over there and England is beautiful, but like, Jesus, man, the weather is horrific. It rains every single day. Yeah. And like, it wears on your soul.
Depressing.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. Like, and believe me, I'm not a depressed type guy, but I was like, all right, let's get back to Florida. And,
yeah. It's bad for your mental health over there.
For sure, bro.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I like the mountains too. That's the thing. That's like my biggest, honestly, concern about Tennessee, because here in the desert, there's actually a lot of mountains.
Yeah, there are mountains there too. You got the Appalachian. You got like Tennessee is probably a good mix of those, man. Like, actually, I got a buddy. Do you know? He's a military guy as well. He owns Patriot Family Homes. He's does short-term rentals as well. Joe Riley. He was a officer. Yeah, man. He lives in Tennessee. I want to say right outside of Chattanooga. Great dude. Was Army Ranger, everything. But like, yeah, I went and stayed with him for a couple of days. We were doing some business, and like, yeah, he bought like a bunch of acres out there. But yeah, there's mountains, hills. It's cool, bro.
I guess there is the Appalachia. I mean, you are right about that. I never been to those. I hear they're a lot flatter than the mountains out west.
Yeah, it is different, but I mean, it's the stuff you can hike and go up and stuff. Like, I don't know what you want to do. You just want to see the mountains, or like you actually go hiking and stuff.
You know, man, like there's a really, really big off-road culture out here. So like side-by-sides, four-wheel trucks, stuff like that. You know, because there's so much freaking public land out here. It's ridiculous. You know, like Nevada's 80% plus public land. So is Arizona. Utah has a whole bunch of it as well. So there's just unlimited trails with seas of ATVs going around in them every weekend. Yeah. So like, I think that's really the cultural thing that I'm really going to miss, you know. But also, we don't have that rock bouncing, you know, mudding culture that I know that they have out east. And, you know, so I'll check out that scene, right? I mean, you make something out of anything if you really want to, right?
Yeah, everywhere has beauty, man. And like, you could find cool stuff or something that you really dig, I think almost anywhere for sure. I mean, that's actually what you're saying is probably California, but none of us are moving there for probably.
Yeah, I don't want to live in communism. Like
exactly.
Honestly, yeah.
Which is a shame, bro, because I tell people.
It like, is, dude.
It's like California as a state is arguably one of the greatest places on earth. Like it literally.
Geographically?
That's what I mean. Geographically, yes. Has yes. Everything. Beaches, yes. Mountains, you know, trees, wilderness and stuff. But yeah, like politically, yeah. All the other stuff socially, it's, yeah, you can have it.
It's a mess. Yeah. I know, dude. Dang it. I need a place like California that's like, that's not communist, dude. I don't know. We don't have one. I don't think that's what I'm looking for.
It doesn't exist, bro. It doesn't exist, which is crazy. I spent a bunch of time in Coronado there in San Diego, and literally it's one of my favorite places, man. But yeah, like especially getting into real estate, you know, Florida was the next best option, and we ended up just falling in love with it. So it's like we're here now for good. But yeah, it is a shame, brother.
What are you going to do, man? Just keep looking.
Yeah, man. You'll figure it out. You seem like you guys are pretty, like, I guess, let's say mobile, but like, are you just kind of looking for where you guys want to lay those roots down? Or like, what's the reason outside of like just wanting something new?
I think that's it, man. You know, I mean, Las Vegas is, it's got a lot of good in it for sure. You know, like economic opportunity is really cool. But that said, it's just, it's hard for me to see myself being here forever.
Okay.
You know, it just doesn't feel like the forever type of town. I really don't want to live in the city, honestly. Okay. And so I think that's really the impetus is I'm just kind of a, you know, I see myself ultimately being like a beef rancher. That's why I do real estate now at this point. Like I saw my parents do it. They were, they did it after they retired from government jobs for many years. And they were really my grandparents, like biologically, right? I grew up with them. So they retired to this ranch in Arizona and I was super young and, you know, so I saw the whole thing and then I left it and I've kind of just, you know, I told you like, I want to get back to it, but I want to do it differently. You know, my idea of how I would do it is just with a lot more money because I've seen how hard they worked.
Yeah.
And how frugal they had to be because of the way that they retired. And I want to have like a foreman and, you know, people, staff running it so that I can stay high level and kind of direct what I want done. And that takes a lot of money, right? Yeah, really. Like ultimately to be able to launch that type of ranch would take a lot of money. So that's really like my big why for doing real estate. You know, I want to, kind of just do that, right? Like eventually. So, you know, we're starting to, since that is the direction, and my wife's on board with that, like totally, you know, she's down to get out of the city and go live that country lifestyle where there are no emergencies, you know? And so that's really the impetus. We're kind of looking for places that could accommodate that.
I love that, man. And I like to hear that you and your wife are on the same page. I think that's so important. Not only in real estate, probably just in anything, but just like I have conversations like this with people and, you know, entrepreneurship is hard on its own. But like if your family, particularly your wife and your partner isn't like 100% and have that kind of vision, it makes it that much harder, man. So I always salute guys, especially if we got a family that your wife is on board and sees the vision you guys are kind of pushing towards. I think that's just so important and stuff, man. So I love that, bro.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That's essential, dude. Like she works in the business. She handles guest communication.
Awesome, man.
And vendor coordination for repair and maintenance, you know, and we've set ourselves up as distance managers. We're in 11 different cities. So strictly speaking, we don't need to live anywhere in particular, you know.
Nice. So, nice.
And that's the beauty of real estate, right? Yeah. Like if you do it right, it like makes you not bound to any, you know, geographical region.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives you that freedom, bro. It sounds cliche and corny just now. You see it all over, but like truly, bro, like that's what it's all about, man. Freedom of choice and being able to make decisions that you want to make for your own life and not be bound by, you know, constraints of exterior world, you know.
For sure, dude. How long you been in Florida? How long you been living there?
Yeah, off and on, like probably 13 years now and stuff. So, yeah, after I got out of the military, I ended up going to college down here. And, yeah, man, it's just a different part to start off in Tampa. What'd you say?
When'd you get out?
So I got out in 2010. So I've been out almost 14 years now.
2010. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so 2010, I was in like Tampa, then down in like Boca for a little bit, and now I'm up in Jupiter. So I'm still South Florida, but like I'm the most north part. So Jupiter, I don't know if you know where like West Palm Beach is, where Mar-a-Lago and all that kind of stuff is, well, in Palm Beach Island. But yeah, I'm up there. So it's like, it's the best of both worlds because, yeah, it's just beautiful here, man. It's loads of golfers here. Loads of just really nice stuff. You know, Tiger lives here. I think like Michael Jordan has a house here. But you're close enough to, you know, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, all that kind of stuff. So it's, for me, it's perfect for us. And plus the weather.
Fantastic. So your kids have just been bouncing around wherever you go, right? Just kind of trailing behind.
No, it just depends, man. Yeah, it just depends on what was going on in different parts. But yeah, they're road dogs for sure.
Right on. Do you have them involved in your business at all?
So not directly now. I mean, my biggest thing is trying to instill in them just the kind of ideas, right? Like what is, you know, what are assets? Like what's the value of investing and stuff? And my oldest daughter, she, it's almost like it was in her. Like I remember because she has family that's up in Rockaway Beach or far Rockaway Beach. So in the summer, she'll go up there and she started off like collecting shells, painting them and then selling them. And that's like evolved into her getting kids to collect them and paint them and then like paying them a profit or paying them like a split of it and stuff. Like, so she's almost had like the entrepreneurial spirit like in her from jump. Right. But yeah, it's really just about trying to teach them the financial literacy side of stuff. So, but like, you know, for my first properties, they were in there helping me get it ready. They helped us clean one the first time. So like they've seen it and they've grown up in it. I'm sure they don't think about it very much, but at some point like, their goal is it will just kind of click and they're like, okay, I get it now.
I get it now. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
We got pictures of them like wrapped on me, like as we're walking properties, all kinds of stuff. So it's cool.
Oh yeah. Awesome. I've been doing this thing with my 4-year-old where, you know, if I go to like Circle K or if I go to, I pick up some Copenhagen there with some regularity, right?
Yeah.
And so she'll come along, maybe I'll buy her a treat. And I started doing this thing, which is like, can I come? Can I get a treat? And I'm like, you got any money? And she's like, she'll scrounge up her piggy bank and like dump it all out and we'll count it out and I'll let her spend every dollar she has, right? And so then finally we get to the point where I'm like, you got any money? She's like, no. And I'm like, nope. I don't know how you're gonna get money, right? And we've told her like, you know, we got these hens too in our yard. So like, well, you could sell some eggs. It's one thing you could do, right? And so we taught her how to sell eggs one time, sort of, you know, took her down the street. She sold some eggs to a neighbor. And then finally, you know, she ran out of money I just kept saying, no, I'm not going to buy it because you spent all your money. So you got to earn some. And then she started asking, okay, let's go sell some eggs. So then she'll take them up. She'll walk up to a neighbor's door. She'll knock on them. She'll get like $2 for 3 eggs, you know, because it's so cute.
Yeah.
And then boom, now she's got some money. So that's like currently my plan to just kind of like teach her, try to just make her understand the value.
So it's a value play. Okay.
You know, yeah, that's all it is. Yeah. That's like, I'm not really trying to teach her to invest or too much of anything other than just understand that you need money to get things you want and there's not an infinite supply.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's interesting, man. It's funny how like, yeah, we all kind of approach it slightly differently, even though we're all kind of, you know, believe in investing and stuff like that. But I think it's huge value in teaching kids like work ethic. So I think that's good.
In sales.
Yeah, sales is a good one for sure.
I even got a little, not frustrated, but like the last time she sold some eggs, you know, my neighbor was such a pushover, right? And I even told him, I was like, dude, I thought you were going to push back a little harder than that, man. Like, should make her like sell you on it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, what can I do with these eggs? Like, you can fry them. You can make egg fried rice. You know, like make her like work a little more for her. Because she literally, I played out this whole thing. I'm like, you got to, if you want to get people to buy these eggs, you got to like show them how valuable they are. You know, yeah, blue eggs. We literally have blue eggs from our hens. You know, so sell them on how cool they are and how good they taste and all natural, this, that, and third thing. And she walks up, knocks on the door, and she's like, Milton, would you like to buy some eggs? And that was it. And he was like, oh.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, right?
Here, like, next time,
next time we do that, like, you got to make her work a little harder, bro.
Yeah. No, that's good, bro. That's good. I like that for sure. Yeah, I think I focus much more on, like, how do you generate income without trading time for money. I think just from a concept standpoint, that's what I try to teach. It's definitely not hidden, bro. I'm not sure this is the best way of doing it, because I definitely believe in like a hard work ethic, but it's like that. That's what I've been kind of like. Anytime they have an idea, well, it's like, okay, well, you know, how can you increase margin? Or like, you know, so I think I'm getting into maybe a little bit more complex concepts than they need to, but at the same time,
yeah.
I just want to expose them to it, bro. Like, one day it's going to click, man.
You know, anything at all is better than what most parents give their kids, I think.
Oh, 100%.
For sure. Like any type of business discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the beautiful part of the time we grow up in. For all the, you know, complaining about the internet and, you know, all of the negative side of it, man, it's like, you know, we are not subject to a lack of information, right? It's just what information do you find valuable and like how can you, like, you know, use it to your advantage, man. And that's kind of my thing. It's like most of us didn't grow up, I've met people that have invested with me. That are like lawyers or doctors that grew up in relatively affluent areas, but their parents didn't talk to them about financial literacy or how money works and stuff. So you realize like how few people actually get exposed to any of these concepts. So that's why I'm just so big on not, you know, not having my kids be a part of that statistic, regardless of like what socioeconomic class you're in. It's like this information is out there for everyone, right? So in the earlier you teach them the stuff, like I think it's the more likely it is to click and it just become of like who they are.
Yeah. 100%, man. Yeah, we're fortunate to have the internet.
Yeah, man, bro.
That's my, like, whenever someone complains about grandparents or something or like judges history, my first thought is like, bro, they didn't have the internet. For real.
Yeah.
You watch Mad Men? It's like, you ever seen the show Mad Men?
Yeah, for sure.
You ever watch it with a female that gets offended by it?
No, I've never done that before. No.
You know, like, which I kind of get to an extent, but then on the one hand, I'm like, they didn't have the internet.
Yeah. Different time, man.
They didn't know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's one of those weird things, bro, for sure.
So what are you looking for, man? What are you like, as far as, I guess, business-wise? Are you looking for clients, for investors, for deals?
Yeah. For me, it's just, I'm looking for, you know, relationships, you know, people that are interested in this space. You know, we never really got into like fully what I do, but, you know, obviously I have my company. We have a full team that's built out. Like, you know, we have realtors to, you know, do contracts and execute, we source our own deals. We underwrite our own stuff. I think like most people, it's the education piece for this side. Most people just don't understand the value proposition of short-term rentals. Like, you know, we believe deeply that if you know anything about kind of real estate, like, you know, 12 years ago, single family homes weren't even looked at as like a whole asset class until Blackstone came in, private equity, America Home for Rent, right? And now, you know, those guys own thousands and thousands of units, right? I think we both saw at some point, I don't know when you got into the space, the opportunity that exists to operate a single family home as a business and actually, you know, generate where we look at them with the cap rates and NOIs and stuff like that. So, you know, in this time where there's so much distress or just volatility in multifamily, my biggest thing is just educating people about, hey, if you still want to invest and you're looking for a solid asset class where people that actually know what they're doing, like take a look at short-term rentals. And that was a part of, you know, starting my education and coaching business for the education side, but also too, like at the end of the day, direct ownership in real estate has the greatest benefit. If you are a high income earner, you go buy the STR once a year, you can mitigate a lot of your tax liability, right? Like, so it's just, for me, it's just getting that message out there. And, you know, if people want to invest, like, awesome, right? Or they want to learn more how to do it themselves, great. We got something for you for that. But I just want to get out the good gospel of this STR thing, man, that, you know, me and you, that it's provided an incredible life for me, bro. Like, at the end of the day, man, like, that's what it boils down to, bro. Like I've created a great life in real estate, and specifically because of what I do now. And I just, awesome, man.
So how many STRs are in your portfolio that you have at least some ownership interest in?
So 132.
Wow. 132 doors.
Yep.
Mostly condos, or what's the mix
look variation like? Man. So, you know, small multifamily, you know, condos, a lot of we buy now is like larger single family homes. Like I said, we're in boutique hotels now. So we got one under contract in, Miami Beach. That's super cool. We actually did a webinar for that yesterday, which is awesome. And I really actually like that model because it's almost like a hybrid of the two, right? It's almost
is it your first boutique?
No, this is my first boutique. It's the first one in Miami. But that market, I think we see some real opportunity there just because they're all over the place. And most of them are just either poorly managed or they're not utilizing all of the distribution channels that they could to really kind of increase the NOI. So the one we're buying is actually, you know, operating pretty well now, but we're definitely going to make
it. You can push the numbers up.
Yeah, for sure.
We just took on our first boutique here in downtown Las Vegas.
Nice, man. Congrats,
bro. Yeah. As management, we didn't, I tried to pitch the buyer syndication because it's kind of funny, man. We got approached by someone to manage this boutique hotel that he just bought. And it was running as a weekly rental. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but it smelled really bad. You know, the tenant base was just poverty.
Okay. Yeah. They don't do it very well, but okay.
Yeah. So that was how they were running it. And he got it for, you know, 24 doors for $2 million. And I don't know if I can say that out loud. Maybe, I guess it's public record, but you know, he got a good price for it. And he wanted to convert it to a boutique hotel, and he's this flipper. So he's got this flipper mindset. He's like, I'm going to get this thing updated at $5,000 a door, out the door, renovation, furnishing, everything. Right. And he had a handful of other properties in town that he was running as Airbnbs. And, you know, he went in with that. I mean, you know how it is, right? If you do a cheap job, you'll get cheap guests that cost the most. Right. And so we kind of educated him right away, and he realized that it's going to take way more money to build a profitable boutique than he initially thought. So I was like, dude, syndicate it. Like, I hope you get the money, man. There's people out there that want to, like, who doesn't want to own a hotel in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
You know, sure. So it shouldn't be too hard. But long story short, he came up with the money. He did all our budgets and everything. He's actually been really great to work with. And as soon as we finished kind of figuring out this one with his money, he's down to like just buy up more vacant hotels around the downtown Las Vegas area, because there's a handful of them. And he's a broker here, been here for like 20, 30 years, brokering real estate, owns a ton as it is. So really would be a good acquisition partner for that. So anyways, we're just finishing up renovation. We're about to do install of the, you know, the design and everything, the furnishing and design, and get it up and running. And so with all that said, I'm going to take advantage of the fact that I got your ear right now. I'm thinking, you know, obviously we'll throw it on Airbnb like we normally do, but also jump into Expedia Group and push it out through all their platforms, you know, those OTAs. direct booking website that will have that too. But outside of that, man, what kind of like suggestions can you give me?
I mean, there's lots of other, I mean, for every, from Google has a platform that you can use. Obviously social media, I think one is the most underutilized, way of positioning your property, especially when you're going for the, experience space, right? Where you can actually provide something that is very unique in that market, even in a market like a Las Vegas, right? Or Miami, where you're creating an experience or a design that is unique. Social media is one of the best ways to promote a property, also get direct bookings, and also get that brand loyalty where people will tell a friend. So that's a great one. I'm not as well versed on the hotel side. So I'm partnering with a deal with a guy down here who is really owns a bunch of hotels. So he has a, we have a whole plan on that end too. So, but like, yeah, those are the major ones. And if you really push it the right way, man, like your occupancies will stay where it needs to be and you can charge that premium for average daily rate.
Instagram, you think that's the best social media?
Oh yeah. For that stuff, 100%.
For that
stuff. Yeah. 100%, man.
Because yeah, that's what we're going for. Like our hotel, we're going to have like, you know, shuffle boards and yeah, games and stuff like, you know, that you don't get at the typical Las Vegas hotel.
Yeah. And so, there's marketing strategy, man. I mean, this is something I've really been focusing on. So for anyone out there listening, and you too, man, follow me and like and subscribe, bro. Push me out into the music. But I've really put a whole lot of emphasis on, you know, marketing and social media because, you know, I wasn't even on it for years and years. But, you know, at the end of the day, even living in an affluent place, it's only so many hands you can shake and babies you can kiss, man. Like you have to get savvy on social media. So there's a lot of things that you can do where you can partner with other different brands or influencers and stuff. And man, people kind of, you know, can laugh at that sometimes for people who aren't in the know, but man, you can get a lot of business by, you know, doing some kind of partnership with those folks. So definitely don't sleep on that aspect of the business.
Have you used influencers before for any of your properties?
No, not specifically for any of my properties, but what I have done is, you know, built relationship, built my brand and in various ways off of that. So that's been extraordinarily helpful for me. Because at the end of the day, bro, like this game is all about visibility, especially when you're talking about doing what we do, you know, raising capital and getting your face out there. The more people with, you know, brand authority or just like awareness, the more people you can get out in front of. And that just only helps everybody down the road.
For sure.
Check me out, bro.
Yeah, I will, dude. No, that's some good stuff, man. I'm always looking for, always, man. Like, I just share everything that I'm doing. Because we're doing really good stuff. We got a solid team, you know. And we got, like, for a single family home, there's very few people that can keep up with us on terms of our ability to generate profits with it.
Nice, man. You know? Love it.
And I mean, that's also a function of the fact that this industry is really young and full of cowboys and mom and pops. So, you know, I guess it's not too hard yet. But, like, you know, we're definitely, like, at the professional level. And we do pretty good there. And I'll just like, I'll give it all away. I'll tell everyone everything we're doing. It took us 3 years to build what we have now. So like, if you think you can do it overnight, by all means, go ahead. I don't mind sharing. And
you still gotta go out and execute, man. And that's the thing.
Yeah. So like, man, my theory at this point is that if you just share everything, then people will share with you too. And we all get to, you know, learn and be better, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure.
What is the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to learn from you or work with you in any capacity?
Yeah, man. So probably LinkedIn or Instagram. So Justin C. Mosley on LinkedIn and was it Justin C. Mosley? I think it's underscore like LMC. I'll send you all that kind of stuff as well. But that's probably the easiest way. Or hit the websites, man. Lestimore Capital or STR Millionaire. So Lestimore Capital is my core business where, you know, we buy and raise capital for STRs and STR millionaires. If you want to learn how to do it yourself, like I said, direct ownership is truly the best way to go. We can show you how to get in this game and get to Trevor's level and start making some real money, brother.
Your level, man, 130 doors. That's freaking not a lot of people that have that in STR space.
Well, yeah, man, but that's, you saw the value, bro. Like you said, this is a new space. And for the people that have the courage to try something and work hard at it, bro, like you can really make a name for yourself, man. This is the early days. Like this, to me, this is one of those things that like 20 years from now, people are going to be looking at like kind of what Amazon stock was. Like, damn, I wish I'd have gotten in early and figured it out.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm with you, man. That's 100% where I'm at.
Yeah. So, but you gotta take that action, bro. And that's the thing a lot of times people miss. They love talking about it, but when it comes down to getting dirty and stuff, like, only strong survive.
They learn, dude. They just want to learn and consume content forever until their fate, until like you can't think anymore, until they think you know everything, and like they have not done any learning from taking action.
Yeah, bro. You learn more in like just doing one deal and just doing it than you would like sitting in, you know. And I'm talking to you as somebody that has a coaching program. Go out, just go do it. If you want to do it, go out and do it. You will learn more by just doing a deal and figuring it out than you will sitting down learning from somebody else. But, you know, some people like that hand holding and stuff. And like, if you do, you want more direction. Like, you got people like myself and others out there that are willing to do it.
I mean, coaching's good because it's like the theory is that they're in the field and they're at least getting some guidance as they're taking action.
Exactly. If you want to shorten distance to getting there and like avoid a lot of the roadblocks and bumping your head against the wall and trying to figure out on your own, like that is the one of the best things you can do. But like, I'm just an advocate of taking action. Like, if your goal is to get there, go do it. It's as simple as that, man. Life is that easy, bro. Like, if you want something, go after it, man. Like, if you want it bad enough and you want to work for it, like, I truly believe that anyone can get anything. It's just how bad you actually want it.
100%, man. Well said.
All right, brother. Abel, appreciate the time, man. This was fun for sure.
Yeah, man. We'll have to do a follow-up later when Max is back and, you know, all that, you know?
Awesome, man. Yeah, no, sounds good, bro.